Good evening. Welcome to A Feminist Perspective. Our topic tonight is Women in Politics, a first of a series of two, and tonight we're going to talk about the changing roles of women in politics. Our panel consists of Margaret Jordan, District Attorney from Johnson County, Kansas, Mary Wilson, the Douglas County Republican Vice Chairperson, and Betty Jo Charlton, the Douglas County Democratic Committee Worker. I'd like to start out by asking each one of you to tell us, how did you personally get involved in politics? When did it all begin, and were you in it all the way through your adult life, or how would you define it? Mary, why don't you start? How did you get involved?
Well, I had a father who thought that was the absolute necessity of life. I was raised in it. It was a privilege. It was an honor. It was an obligation. So I guess you have to say I didn't really start out with a choice.
It's did you do anything as a when you were in high school, for instance, or was it after you were married? Or?
Oh no, I did something all my life in some capacity or another. If it was nothing but handing out handbills, I would suppose I got deeper into it after I got a little bit more into my adulthood. I had heavy drafting from our own Bob Ellsworth that had probably jumped in with both feet at that time, heavier than I ever, but always I have had in some capacity served, including the licking of stamps.
How did you decide to be a Republican, or were you just always a Republican, too?
No, I believe in the Republican philosophy. That could very well be because that was the philosophy I was raised by. I wouldn't question that, but I still believe in free enterprise and the lack of big government and Big Brother not watching over me, and that's just my particular philosophy, and I've followed it always and probably will from now on.
I see. And how about you, Bejo? How did you get involved?
Well, I, too, was reared in family. It was conscious of politics and political affairs, but I wasn't actively involved until 1966, the first time Robert Docking ran for governor. And the Democratic Party in Kansas was trying to have a candidate for every seat for the Kansas House of Representatives. And the district I lived in, the seat was held by a man who had been incumbent for about three terms, and nobody else was willing to run against him. And so I started out as a candidate. And 2 years later, still no one else was willing to run against him, and so I was a candidate again. And since that time, I've been active in the party locally and helping local candidates.
That's interesting, kind of starting out as a candidate. Have you ever been a candidate, Mary?
No, and I have no desire to be a candidate.
Why not?
Well, I guess I'm lazy.
Oh.
I just like doing the work. I don't really want to get out and make the effort to run for anything. Never have wanted to.
All right, how about you, Margaret? How'd you get started?
Well, I'm kind of a contrast to our other two panel members. My only brush with politics was having a father who was on a small city council that was very much of a gentlemanly volunteer chore, and running as a write-in candidate for the Greenbrook Township, New Jersey Board of Education to oppose the firehouse gang that had controlled the school for ever since the township had been in existence. I have never worked as a political worker. I have never been anything in politics but a candidate, so that I have, as Mary talks about it, always had to run for my life when it came to a political matter, because it was something in which I was personally involved. Now, of course, I started out by erupting in a fit of pique at something that was going off at City Hall and marching up and filing my petition in the city of Leawood, a city of 12,000. And this has been the beginning of my political career, and that was in 1966, so I am come very lately to the scene of politics.
That's I read the other day that one of the real contrasts between women and men in politics is that 75% of the women who are running for office started after the age of 40, whereas only 10% of the men had not previously run for office before the age of 40. Have any theories on that as to why that is, or is it desirable, undesirable, or how do you feel about it?
I was past 40 when I ran for the Kansas House the first time. I think before that, if someone had approached me, I would have said I was too busy. I belonged to that post-World War II generation of young women, you know, that according to some of the writers, was told that we should go to our back to our homes and raise our children and just play our natural role. And so I would have thought
natural
that...
in their opinion, anyway.
Yes.
any other theories as to why women start so late?
Most of them are playing that role. Whether it's anybody's opinion or not, I would have to assume that the major portion of women... I have a niece, for instance, who is now running for city council in Florida, and she's just past 40. She's an extremely intelligent young woman who... graduated magna cum laude from Indiana, and she raised her family, and now she's branching out. I don't know whether it's a role that was assigned or anything else. I think it was her free choice that she wanted that. Certainly, had I been a candidate, very likely I would have done it too after I was past the childbearing capacities.
Well, we're supposed to be talking about change here now, and I might mention that there... is now this year there's a young woman in Douglas County running for the Kansas House of Representatives, and she's 24 and she has a 4-year-old child. And I think the last time we met I mentioned that when I was a candidate several years ago, the only thing that my opposition could think of to say was, well, why doesn't she stay at home and take care of her house and family? And I don't believe that the young woman, this 24-year-old, has heard that yet. I mean, I haven't heard anyone say this about her.
I've no doubt there are some who are saying it, but it is true that in terms of the change, there are many young women who are running now.
I doubt very much if there is a criticism of her that there would have been, say, 10 years ago if a 24-year-old woman with a young child had been a candidate.
I think that also you can't overlook the subjective change that takes place through childbearing and being deeply involved in more and more responsible activities. The problem of women, and this is one thing that I thoroughly agree with Betty Friedan about, is that they have been trained that they have no judgment, that they have no image, that they are sexist objects. And by the time you reach 40, you say, how the heck with it? If I want to get something changed, I guess I'm going to have to do it myself. And that's when you march up and stand up and be counted. You don't think of it as a career so much as being willing to stand up and be counted for something you sincerely think needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't disagree more with anybody than that kind of a theory that you were raised that way. I wasn't raised that way. I was raised in a family with 3 boys and an only girl, and I was taught that I was important. It didn't make a difference what my sex was. I was important, and if I had something to say, I was supposed to say it. If I had something I wanted to do, I was supposed to do it. Nobody assigned any kind of a role to me.
Mary Shirley, you realize how unusual this is. You and I were the exception.
Very possibly the exception, but don't necessarily have to be. Hopefully I raised my daughters the same way, that they are important people in their own right. They're not competing with men. They're doing the best they can do with what they have to do with. It was that simple.
Well, if you're going to compete,
I was
they
raised.
Ought to be competing with anybody, men or women.
They should be competing with themselves and doing the best they know how to do.
But you would admit, wouldn't you, that Margaret is right, that that's the exception rather than the rule.
I couldn't say. I was only raised by one person, two people, rather, a father and mother, so I couldn't say
You must
that.
Have observed what's happening in general, though. There aren't very many women who are involved. What are the present statistics, just in case anybody doesn't know?
I have a few numbers here as far as candidates. for the House of Representative Kansas only this year and 4 years ago, and party officers in the party organizations in Kansas. Mm-hmm. Dean Taylor, in 1970, there were 15 women who were Democrat county chairman and 17 women who were Republican county chairman. Now, of course, there are 105 counties in Kansas, and the law has regarding party organization has never stood in the way of women. The law says simply that the county chairman and vice chairman shall be of the opposite sex.
Mm-hmm. So it could have been either way.
It could have been either way, but, and of course not, and both the counties are not organized in every county, so this is not out of 250 people or out of 105 counties, but nearly so, nearly all. The parties are, both major parties are organized in nearly all the counties. Mm-hmm. Now, that was in 1970, 4 years ago, and in 1974, I got this out of the little booklet, Kansas Vote, the Voter's Guide. It's available at Blake Hall from the sixth floor of Blake, the Institute of, ISIS?
I don't know. They send them through the mail.
You know what I mean? Yes, they're available. They're free up there. All right, the state chairman of all four parties in Kansas, you know, we do have four parties. Republican, Democratic, Prohibition, and American. The chairman are men. The district chairman of all four parties are all men. The county chairman, there's 16 women, Democrats, and 15 women, Republicans. All right, there are 21 women county chairmen in the two major parties. 22, 4 years ago. I don't see much change. That's party.
So you've gone down a
little. That's party organization. All right, candidates for the Kansas House. There are 125 seats in the Kansas House, but there some of these seats are uncontested. A few of them are. So this does not mean 250 candidates. But in 1970, there were 8 women running for the Kansas House, and in 1974, there are 16 women running for the Kansas House. Now that's doubling the number, but that's still not very many out for 125 seats, or for say 250 candidates. Running for Congress from Kansas in 1970, no women candidates. In 1974, 2 women candidates. Martha Keys running in the second district as a Democrat, and Thelma Morgan running in the first district on American ticket.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else have any comments on this, on what's actually happening in terms of change?
I would agree with the feeling behind those figures, because there's no doubt the women are starting to get out from behind the coffee pot and be willing to go up and say it in person. I think that in terms of the experience to be put at the disposal of the state to cut off by sex half of the people that have ideas, viewpoints, a management perspective, is simply wasting our political resources. And I think that anything that we can do to encourage greater participation is urgently needed.
Mm-hmm. On a more overall picture, since the goal is to have things in some proportion to the population as it actually exists, to give an idea of how far we are from the goal, we might look at these figures. Certainly there's been a breakthrough. It's just a start. We certainly haven't seen the end of it yet, because there are additional women all the time who are running. But this would require, if it were really equitable, this would mean we'd have to have 25 women governors. How many do we have now?
None.
with one possible, it seems like a pretty good possibility in Connecticut. We'd have to have 3,750 women in state legislators, state legislatures. This year we had 402. That's out of the 7,500 state legislatures. We had no women senators. There's a possibility of 2 this year. I guess only 1 is considered a strong possibility. In the House of Representatives, how many we'd have to have? 218. We had 16 this year, 4 of whom have retired, although there are quite a number of women who are running. And as one woman put it, as people speculate on what difference it would make, what she said was that any time you change the nature of the people who are in the legislature or in the Congress, you're going to have a different Congress and or a different legislature. You're going to have people who are concerned about issues from different points of view. They may be the same issues, ultimately, but concerned about them from different points of view. Do you think it's likely to what change do you see likely as in the future? Is this just a temporary aberration and people are going to go back to the way it was, or will we see increasing numbers of women running for office?
Well, I think that we are going to see, not just in terms of increasing number of candidates for office, I think we're going to see a great deal more participation by women in all roles in life that were traditionally male. And I think the biggest change is brought about by the attitude of the young married men, the educated men of the upcoming generation. I can recognize it among the young lawyers in my own office. To them, the jobs that they have are complementary to the jobs that their wife has. Whether they move for a promotion is a joint decision. How they spend their time outside the office is a joint decision. There is not this automatic relegation of sexist roles that, you know, I fix the fences once a year and you wash the dishes three times a day. I think that that is a noticeable change in attitude, I think, brought into other areas, that this is going to lead to more confidence, because this is what really the feminist movement, to my mind, is all about. Give them the confidence to try it.
Anybody have a different opinion? Or?
Well, I don't have any different opinion. I do have definite ideas with regard to whether women or whoever may run for public office. What I'm looking for is competence, ability, know-how. I don't think it's the least bit important whether it's a man or a woman. If they're a Margaret Jordan, sure, they ought to run. If they're not a Margaret Jordan, stay home and stuff envelopes. Point that
how
I
about,
think we need
about
more
some
than
of the men who are in there.
Nothing wrong. I know a few men that do a little stuffing of envelopes, too. The point that I feel is so doggone important is that we get competence, people who know what they're doing and how they're doing. I am not in the least bit impressed with somebody who decides I should be doing this or that because I'm a woman. I have never paid any attention to it, and I'm not likely to start now. And if we've got women that are competent, let's don't put them in there because we've got to balance something. Let's put them in there because they know what they're doing and they can do it well. They can do it better than someone else could do it. That, to me, is the whole crux of the whole political system. I can remember, and I'm sure some of the others, maybe not you younger ones here, but in my younger days,
which ones are she's talking about?
We kept re-electing Andrew Scheffel to the Senate, not because they thought he was a competent senator, but he looked like a senator. Well, big deal. You know, I may know a few women who may look like senators, but let's not elect them just because they look like senators. Let's elect them because they're there to do a job and to do it right. And why worry, in my opinion anyway, whether we have the equal number of governors or senators or what else? Let's look for competence, and if we find it in women, let's push the women.
What do you
push
think
them right up the line.
Do you know of any evidence that there's less competence among women than among men?
No.
No, none at all. I don't know of any.
Then as we look at the statistics, they're rather revealing, aren't they?
If well, we're do really women, then, do the women themselves think they're less competent? Because if they do that, then obviously they're not going to. All right, then it's a question of re-educating the women, isn't it? Right.
That was Margaret's point, Mary. Mm-hmm. That was precisely her point.
Yeah. Where do you go about doing that?
Well, you started...
It had to have started way back down when they were little.
I think you'll have to stop saying, Mary, you'll have to stop telling them nobody's foot's on your neck, because... figuratively, I'm afraid there has been.
Not on mine.
Well, but if you're going to educate other women, those that you were just talking about who may be competent but who don't have the self-confidence, I think maybe you could be more
helpful. Well, are they going to go through the rest of their life
attitude.
Thinking that somebody's, I can't do this because somebody's neck's on my, foot's on my neck or something of that sort?
Well, I think that there's a practical a point of view, and I have a standing offer in my county that anyone from any party, man, woman, young or old, that has something to say and wants to become involved in politics, I will consult with them and help them write a campaign outline, give them advice on timing, the practicalities of how much money, how many workers, what your timing schedule would be. And I think that you can have all the philosophical considerations you want, but I think anybody that makes it has an absolute duty to put a hand down and hoist somebody else up.
Well, I can't argue that. There's nothing wrong with that.
I think that this is one thing, because many men, they run a better bluff, Mary, let's put it that way. But I think many men, from talking to neophyte office holders, feel just as terrified about, what am I doing here? But I think that they will be more prone to leap the gap and try it than many women will. And this is why I say that if we can focus on the philosophy of the value of having candidates that are defeated, that they have something to say, that you serve a purpose merely by winning, I mean by losing, just being up there and giving the other side of the question, that winning is not the whole point of the political game. I think that that would encourage a lot more people to come in that might otherwise feel, well, it's like, maybe it's being a lawyer. I know that half the suits you're going to lose. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to lose half of them.
Speaking of being a lawyer, there's certainly some connection there, too, isn't there, with a small number of women who have gone into law school. And part of that's been a question of their not considering that as an option, and part of it's been a question of access. These problems are certainly being worked at now, and the possibility of getting into law school for a woman is probably about as good as it is for a man if she really gets past that first stage. But many of the people who go into politics are lawyers, and since most lawyers have been men, this may bring about a change too, as more women go into the law as a career. Because I personally think that all our legislators ought to be lawyers.
Oh, heavens no. We need some common sense to balance that.
It is a particular characteristic of our political system, though.
Yes, it has been.
Mm-hmm. But it's fading. The Kansas legislature has a far less proportion of lawyers in now than it has had traditionally.
Well, it had lawyers and farmers. I think the farmers outnumbered the lawyers, Margaret. But
it's not going in the other direction, I take it. We probably need all kinds of people in all kinds of walks of life if everything is to be... If everything is to be considered that ought to be before a bill is passed or even, for that matter, introduced. Do you think that there are any positions within the American political structure that women should not aspire to or start getting prepared for?
No. On the other hand, I think that there are many positions in not just in politics, not just in elective and appointed life that are crying for a woman's viewpoint. And I think that there's a lot of value in starting with appointments. I know that when I was mayor, I made a deliberate effort to recruit women to serve on city committees, get their feet wet, get them mad enough, involved enough, so that they would go on to the elective process. But because that's pretty heady stuff. You need a strong head to withstand the elective process. Mm-hmm.
So you really, in terms of helping to get women involved, think that one starting place is just in public service of any kind?
Yes, and this is one of the things. We've always actively recruited women as political volunteers, not in Republican, Democratic, but I'm talking about in public service. I have recruits that work in my consumer fraud division for now in the office. I have recruits, volunteers for the Drug Abuse Council, we're setting up special volunteer parole projects. There's a lot of people that can get involved in something, and if they don't want to do bandages or any kind of the traditional volunteer roles, there's plenty of work.
You know, I am inclined to venture the opinion that if you're going to want to get all these women involved in these things, that what you need are to buttonhole the Margaret Jordans of this world, and a woman who obviously felt that she'd been put down or she wouldn't have attained the place that she has, and educate women to think of how they feel about themselves, not about how someone feels about them. Now, that seems to me to be the crux of the situation, and all this Mickey Mouse about the role that's been assigned, maybe they ought to devote more Margaret Jordan's times to convincing women that there hasn't really been any role assigned to them, that they can do about anything they want to do if they think well enough of themselves to try to do it.
Well, I think we would agree with you. We don't probably all agree with you on that. But not that the roles haven't been assigned to women, because we know they have been assigned not only to women, but they've been assigned to men too.
Not only in our culture, but in every culture.
That's right.
Uh-huh. There's something interesting I noticed earlier in our conversation. Margaret expressed the same reason for giving women equal rights in politics that John Stuart Mill did in the 19th century. His reason was, it tied in with his utilitarian principle, that if women were not allowed to vote and participate in politics and business, then society as a whole suffered because it was deprived of their services. Mm-hmm. And of course, John Stuart Mill's political philosophy fits very, very nicely with Mary's ideas that she's expressed about her political philosophy. So I think you'll both find a father in John Stuart Mill.
Well, I think you're right. Of course, the very fact that we waited for so many years even to get the right to vote would give us some indication of assigned roles. You couldn't deny that, could you, Mary?
Well, no, I wouldn't argue that point, although did come a little bit before my time. Not too far, I understand, but a little bit before my time.
Well, it's not before your time now that we have yet failed to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment, so we're a little behind. I think the actual belief systems of the country, very few people would deny that they disapproved of equality of opportunity for everybody, but like so many other things we argue about, it would be interesting if we had time to talk about public financing and what that might mean to women, since obviously our elections are publicly financed now, but in a different kind of way. The sense of money couldn't possibly come from any other source other than the public. But the role of the woman in relationship to the financing of elections, the way in which elections are financed at the present time, would be a very interesting one to discuss. We have just about a moment left. Any of you care to say anything about it? We have only 30 seconds left, so it'd have to be very fast.
Well, if you're going to talk about financing, the number of dollars that are raised by volunteer efforts of women that don't depend on single large contributions should stand them in very good stead. Get $50,000 contributions instead of $50,000 in a lump. That's the secret. Mm-hmm. And that's within the realm of any woman.
I agree, Margaret.
Well, I'm sorry that our time is up. We have discussed tonight the first of two programs on women in politics, concentrating on the changing roles of women. Our panelists have been Margaret Jordan, District Attorney in Johnson County, Kansas, Mary Wilson, Douglas County Republican Vice Chairperson, and Betty Jo Charlton, the Douglas County Democratic Committee Worker. Thank you very much for coming, and thank you for joining us for A Feminist Perspective. Good evening. Welcome to A Feminist Perspective. Tonight, we are discussing women in politics, a second program on this subject. Last week, we had as our guest Margaret Jordan from Kansas City, District Attorney. Who else did we have last week? Betty Jo Charlton from the Democratic Party and Mary Wilson from the Republican Party. Tonight, our guests are Mary Allen from the Kansas State Democratic Party, Vice Chairperson for the Kansas State Democratic Party, and Mary Nell Rees, who is the State Republican Party Vice Chairperson. Do you call yourself Chairperson now, or is it still Chairman?
Doesn't make any difference to me as long as I get to do the job.
Okay. And Danelle Rees-Taha, Associate Professor of Law at the University of Kansas, and incidentally, the only woman professor in our law school.
I'd like to start out, as we did last week, by asking each one of you to tell us how did you get involved in politics, if obviously two of you are, and we'll ask Danelle whether she intends to get involved in politics, I suspect, or in what way she already is involved. Mary, do you want to start? How did you get involved in politics?
Well, a number of years ago, my husband came home one day, and he said, Mary, we need a precinct committee woman for the Democratic Party in our precinct. Will you run? And I really wasn't too knowledgeable as to what a precinct committee woman did, but I said, yes, of course I will, and went down to sign my intent to be a candidate and filed and was elected. I found myself about 2 weeks after the election, elected the vice chairman of the Shawnee County Central Committee and also the vice chairman of the Congressional District. And that's how I got started. I really got in with both feet real fast.
So you started in actually in an election.
I did.
I think it might be interesting to some people to know, you said you weren't sure what a precinct committee woman did. Did you know what you were supposed to do in order to qualify to run?
Oh, yes. My husband is a lawyer, and
He told me.
I should add, I guess, that I had worked in his campaign. He ran for what is now district attorney in Shawnee County, and I helped in his campaign, which is a little different than helping other people, I might add. It's a little more personal when you're working for your own or yourself. But
Marinelle, how did you get in? And were you always a Democrat?
No, I was not. I was born in a completely Republican family, and I married a Democrat law student. And
He changed your mind.
He changed my mind, yes. We had some very interesting discussions the first 2 or 3 months we were married on both politics and, I might add, on religion. And I've told this story before, and I hope these women will bear with me. I was a Republican, and my husband was from a long line of Democrats. They had been Democrats since the inception of the Democratic Party with Thomas Jefferson, and had, by the way, been running for office. One of our my husband's ancestors had run for Congress back the time of Thomas Jefferson on the Democratic ticket. So I lost every political argument that we had at the time. And so we finally decided that we would compromise. It was a very serious one. I registered as a Democrat, and my husband joined my church. He was a Presbyterian, and I was a Lutheran. And he became a Lutheran, and I became a Democrat. And they say converts are the best, and I have done a lot of work in the Democratic Party, and he has done most of the church work. So we found it to be very rewarding, and we're both very dedicated
to what your final decisions were.
Yes, we are.
Interesting. Marinelle, what about you? How'd you get involved?
Well, I've been involved a long time. I grew up in a family that felt that as a citizen you had both rights and responsibilities. I also had an aunt who was a history teacher, and I think as I look back on it, she probably had some influence. She felt that it was very important that women were both informed and involved, and I think probably that rubbed off in years before I knew it. And then I myself was interested in it, and so I have worked at the local level. I've worked as a high school student in the youth movement, in the party, and as a high school and college student, and then did a lot of my work when I was rearing my family as a volunteer, doing the things I could do in the hours I had. And then when my last daughter, and I am the mother of four daughters, went to college, I decided I had time to give more time to something. And in thinking it over, I decided that the thing I was at the present time most interested in and felt needed some more work on was my party. And I am a Republican. I am a Republican by choice of philosophy. I desperately believe in the rights of the citizens to make their own decision and to make it closest home. That government is best closest to the people. And it's on that precept that I ran for state vice chairman and was elected a year and a half ago and have served since then.
Would it be fair to ask you whether You married a man who was also of the same political persuasion, or did you talk him into it, or?
Well, he's now both a member of my church and my political party. He was, I think by philosophy, a Republican, and is deeply involved and interested in these type of things. I don't know that I tried to reform him any more than I did my daughters. I wanted them to know why I believed what I did and then be free to make their choice.
And what about that? Are your daughters interested, as you were, in political matters?
Out of four of them, some are interested in political matters and some are interested in music and art. All of them, however, will take accept a role and responsibility in it.
Mm-hmm. You have any children, Ms.
Yes, mm-hmm. We do. We have one son who is a junior here at the University of Kansas and a daughter who will be a freshman here next fall. And we also have had most of our dinner time conversations evolve around politics in some way or another, or around the law. And we felt that our children should make up their own minds as to what their politics would be then when they were growing up. I will say we were a little prejudiced, but they seem to be pretty independent thinkers. And our son did, when he registered to vote at 18, did register as a Democrat, which pleased his mother and father, but we weren't quite sure until he went to death there. Young people do think for themselves nowadays. I think it's great.
I would really let my daughter speak for herself.
Yes, your daughter is here, and now you can tell us how accurate you feel from your perspective your mother's statement has been on this subject of her children.
Well, I'd just say it's redundant to say that I was born waving the flag. And from Mother's discussion, it's obvious that I've been in politics from the time that I was a very small child. Really, my most active involvement started during Huck Boyd's campaign, and I traveled around with Huck and Mamie and Bess and got a really inside view on what Kansas looks like from the grassroots. And that was about the time I was an eighth grader, and since that time I've been working very actively in politics, and particularly at little volunteer activities from that time on until I got involved just after law school. I was a White House fellow and served in the executive branch in Washington, really at cabinet level, served as a special assistant to James Hodson, who was then Secretary of Labor, and began to see not only the grassroots side of politics, but indeed high-level politics in how they affect each of us and how they operate in Washington, and became more and more convinced that not only was it right that I was born waving the flag, but I was also born a Republican, and am far more convinced of that today than I was before I saw the operations in Washington.
Now, you've brought up a subject that we did not discuss last week, because we talked entirely in terms of elective, or almost entirely in terms of elective politics. But you are presenting another side, and you want to comment on career politics versus avocational politics on either an elected basis or an appointed basis?
Well, Emily, I might start that out. I listened to last week's program and noticed that the comment was made that most women in the over 40 group saw politics as an avocation along with whatever else they were involved in, whether it was raising children or whatever. And I would say that maybe one of the big reasons that younger women are moving into the political sphere is that they do indeed see it as a career. And they do see that their opportunities and horizons are widening, that there's an opportunity there for them to make themselves known on the issues, and that politics for men has been a career in many instances, and that it can be the same for women. Mary and my mother could probably both comment better than I, but I'm getting a first-hand taste of it. One of the problems is that you have to judge your own capacities, your own physical capacities, as far as taking on any career, whether it's politics, whether it's being a law professor, whether it's being a mother, whatever it is. And when you try to combine two of those in the 20 to 40 age group, you have a physical capacity problem that you have to deal with. And so the young women who are becoming involved and seeing it as a career are also having to deal with the problems of their own time slots and physical capacities.
Mm-hmm. Well, I might add that I still have one teenager at home, and of course, as I said before, one here at the University of Kansas, and I still find that I have some problems with this. I try to be at home when my daughter is home, and this does cause some problem. I still feel I am, first of all, a mother, and I've had to kind of delegate my time in various ways, too. I do some working, part-time working, a career, if you could call it career. I work as a secretary to one of the state senators in the Kansas Senate during the legislative session, and this is taking part of my time, so maybe I can relate a little bit to you, Vanell, in that, you know, I work part, a little bit of the time, and for pay, and a lot of the time is volunteer for the Democratic Party, and still try to maintain my home. And it is not easy, even, and I'm over 40. I think it gets a little harder.
I think there are really three arenas that women can work in politics, and I think the first and most important for every woman is that she should be an informed citizen and vote. Now that is
absolutely.
And the second one, that there is the arena of politics itself as a profession, which we've been talking about, as a candidate or campaign manager. And then I think there's a responsibility that we sometimes don't touch on, and that is that we do have the responsibility to rear another generation of good citizens. And
yes,
I think those three arenas are good. And I think one thing we're touching on here is avocation and vocation is that of appointive places for women. It seems to me that we, last week, I heard the discussion, and it centered around candidacy, mm-hmm. but I think there are many appointive offices and places, there's much work to be done in this field where qualified women are to be found, and I think I would have to go along with one of my constituents on last week's panel that I do not want to be chosen at any job because I am a woman. I want to be chosen because they think I'm qualified to do the job, and I want to be free to choose those who work with me. The same token, and I think women themselves must have to see to being qualified.
And would you say the same thing's true of men? You wouldn't want to vote
absolutely
for someone
not.
Just because he was a man?
I don't want to differentiate by race, creed, sex, or anything else. I think qualification is what we need in candidates.
What I think I hear you saying is that everyone, regardless of whether he has or she has any interest in politics as a career, does have a citizen's responsibility to be aware of the issues
absolutely.
And to vote.
This is my personal feeling, and I feel very strongly about it, and being informed.
I used to take my children with me to vote when they were old enough just to toddle. I would take them with me to the polling place when they were one and one and a half and two. I was sure they would grow up and feel a responsibility to vote, but I wanted them to get in the habit, too, mm-hmm. of every election day. They went with me to...
And I think there are these other arenas. For instance, in this present campaign, there are a number of women managing the campaigns in my own party here in the state. I believe there are more women than men as campaign managers. For the first time in the history of Kansas, I was chairman of the platform committee, first time a woman had been. And I think there are other areas. And on the national scene, Mary Louise Smith, as national chairman of the Republican Party, is a first in the nation. And I think it's the kind of jobs we do as well as the numbers.
We also have had a Democratic national chairman. Jean Westwood was national chairman of the Democratic Party 2 years ago, and which I think was a great thing for mm-hmm. for women.
But I think it's the jobs we do as well as the numbers doing them.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are more women running.
Yes, tell us, sort of run through those that situation again. This has been called by some writers and newspapers as the year of the woman because we have so many more women who are running. And I'd like for you to sort of review where we are in regard to that. And then I'd like for us to discuss what are the factors, in your opinion, which have brought out more women. Do you have some statistics?
I have here? A few. I was surprised. At first they sounded very good, and then when I looked at the total picture, I wasn't so sure. At the present time, there are 441 total women from all parties in state legislatures. But That's out of 7,500. Mm-hmm. And the figure of 441 sounds very bad when you consider that there are 7,500 women need to get into this area. This is the state legislatures are a great place for a woman to become involved because they don't have to go so far from home. They can stay within their state, and it's generally a short session. At least it is in the state of Kansas. In the Democratic Party nationally, I don't know what the figures are in the Republican Party, but we have 531 women running for state legislative spots.
So that's more women running in one party than all the women now serving.
That is right.
In state legislatures. Mm-hmm.
We have 30 women running for the United States House of Representatives. 10 of these are incumbent congresswomen or congresspersons, congressmen, whatever the term.
I'm sure they wouldn't want to be called men.
No. And we have two running, one from Oregon and one from Maryland, for the United States Senate. We have one candidate for governor running in the state of Connecticut, and I believe the Republican Party has two women.
That's right.
Maryland and Nevada, as I understand. The Democrats have one woman running for lieutenant governor in the state of New York. We have 8 women running for Secretary of State. We have 5 now serving, so this is some more running for Secretary of State. We have 6 now serving as state treasurers, and there are 8 running for state treasurer. So this there is an improvement, but
still a long way to go.
We have a long ways to go. Yes, we do.
Do either of you know any statistics on the
there are definitely a number of more women running, and as you say, they are saying it's the year of the women. There may be a lot of reasons for this. I think women's interest is higher on it, and they're getting involved in it.
Well, I think there's more than that. I think it's the fact that this year, finally, we're looking at the issues instead of the party. I think Watergate, whether you're on either side of the aisle, pointed out the importance of the issues over the political background. And although I am the first to say that I think that one should work within a political party in order to influence the process, whether it's Republican or Democrat, we've all of a sudden this year realized that we also should focus on the integrity of the person and of their knowledge of the issues. And whether Watergate was good or bad or indifferent for the country, one thing it did do was make us focus on knowledge of the issues rather than the party from which he came. He or she came. And I think in that sphere, it's the best possible atmosphere for a woman because she can show, lo and behold, that she knows something and somebody will listen to her. Therefore, I think that regardless of the party that you're in, one reason this year is a good atmosphere is we're talking about inflation, we're talking about foreign aid, we're talking about agriculture policies, we're talking about in the state of Kansas, for instance, we're talking about pension plans, we're talking about tax structures, we're talking about schools, and we're not talking only about the party from which the candidate came.
That's right. We have issues this time with which women can identify. Women are grocery shopping. The inflation issue is a very real thing to women, and I think this has had a lot to do with it. And I also think that women at this time have more, if I may use the word, credibility than maybe some men candidates do. Women are have a little different image. Maybe this has encouraged more of them to go into it. Do you disagree with me right now?
No, I don't disagree with you, Mary. I also think that that women are preparing themselves better for these types of things now, and I think there are a lot of issues, and I think we're wanting to put knowledgeable people in the seats to deal with
Absolutely.
Them. People that have had experience with those type of things that are qualified with state government, qualified to work in the national scene, qualified to deal with these issues, and I think that has much to say about it. I think Donnell's right, and we're beginning to look at credibility, those types of things, but I think she's especially right in the fact that we're looking at the issues and who's capable of solving them, and I think we're all wanting to put a qualified person, and if the person comes across and we realize they're qualified, then this makes a difference. I think a party has a responsibility there myself. I think you have a responsibility to have a qualified slate.
Yes.
I'd like to elaborate or make one comment about something Donnell said about working within the framework of a party. Basically, I think when I'm very honest with myself, my political work has been done basically because I believe in a two-party system. that there mm-hmm. must be a two-party system. And my husband and I both have. And this is really what has been my big motivation in politics, is the preservation of this system. And whether we work in the Democratic Party or we work in the Republican Party or the Prohibition mm-hmm. Party or whatever, we need to be work within the framework of the party and
we need
not
to be
outside.
Glad that there are good people when there are good people running on either
Absolutely.
One, too.
Absolutely.
I've been kind of interested in the fact that that so many of the issues at the present time are represent the extraordinary worries of just plain old common people, and that some of the women who are running have started their campaigns on very mundane issues. For instance, Betty Roberts, as a state legislator in Oregon, is said at least to have led the battle against throwaway bottles. Now, that's a very ordinary kind of thing, but it deals with something that we're all aware of, that the whole ecology business, and Fong in Hawaii ran on the pay toilets. I mean, this was her beginning, the beginning of the whole thing, feeling that it was discriminatory, that by and large they were discriminatory to women.
Well, especially in airports.
Well, almost anywhere where there are such things. Danelle, would you
Well, I was just going to expand a little bit on historically why this may be, quote, the year of the woman. I don't know that that's necessarily a good terminology. But in the historical genesis of women as anything, women mm-hmm. as lawyers, women as doctors, women as politicians, women as whatever, engineers, jockeys, I think we've come to a point in the historical process when we've realized that women may be able to govern as well as do all these other things. And women are preparing themselves not only within party structures and so on, but they're preparing themselves professionally. And young women are getting the advantage of educational opportunities. They're getting the opening and expanding advantages of experience at much younger ages than was the case 20, 50 years ago. Therefore, they're prepared at an earlier age to go into the kinds of things that the term that was used, the over 40 gang last week, were able to do and indeed had the opportunity to do some time ago. So I think it's not only preparation in the political sphere, but it's preparation as people and educated people and people with experience in various areas.
Just qualified in every mm-hmm. field because we're qualifying. I know as a mother of girls, I would have thought no more of getting the education for them had they been boys. Mm-hmm. I felt girls needed, should have, and were qualified for
and
that.
You would have felt that way, I presume, even if you had sons.
I would have felt the same way either
well,
way.
I have one of both, and uh-huh.
It was
very important to us that mm-hmm. both of our children.
It certainly was once true that the boys' education certainly came first, and then if the family could afford it, they sent the girls too. But I think that this also is changing, and there's a recognition that education is necessary for everyone.
I think she's right, and this is why younger women are going into it, is that they're prepared for it, and I believe in the preparation.
We must thank the media for this, television, radio. Our young people are have the exposure that we didn't have. My goodness, they can turn on the television or listen to the radio and they can hear the candidates for office or people who already hold office. It's fantastic what our young people know. It really, truly is. I wonder sometime how I would do if I had to go back and go through college, whether I would do as well as I did 25 years ago.
My
background.
Whether or not you have any opinion on whether young people are taking advantage of all this exposure? I know we hear that, and it's true, and we're watching. Are the young people watching on the and reading and really becoming aware of the what the problems of the country are and the possibilities for solving it? Are they participating in the debate?
I think I would respond to that in that a little of two opposite extremes is happening. The barrage of communications has done two things. It has either made a young person absolutely adamant about the need to be involved in order to express his or her opinion because they don't like some of the things they see or because they may indeed like some of them. Or it has made the young person feel that it is really not a very effective mechanism, our whole governing process. And unfortunately, I think the events of the last 2 years have had that effect on a lot of young people. I would think that, in my own opinion, I think that there are several things that the barrage of communication, such I like to term it, one, it has certainly stirred an interest. Even if it's apathy, apathy is an interest these days. And at this particular time in their lives, say a college student may or may not have the time or the inclination to become involved in the political sphere, but as they get down the road into the economic life of the country, they will begin to realize what an impact either the good or bad job that's being done at the governing levels is going to have on their personal life. And I think that the apathy, or I don't even like the word apathy, the lack of interest, may turn into a fighting interest.
As long as it doesn't just become cynicism.
That's right. And that's,
there is some cynicism. Mm-hmm.
Indeed, I think there is cynicism. On the other hand, I'm not even sure the cynics are bad. Because as we look back through history, last week Betty Jo referred to John Stuart Mill. Well, through history, there have been the cynics of the political process. And the fact that they happen to be the younger people has nearly always been true. In the French Revolution, they weren't the old guys, they were the young people. And therefore, I think that as we look through history, we're really not going through such a different phase. The cynics are the people who are on the outside watching. And it doesn't matter if it's young people, old people, philosophers, students. At least we're involved in a process where there are cynics, and I find that healthy, and we have an atmosphere in which that can be expressed, and I would regret the day and think it would be the day when this country would not be as strong if that cynicism were not given a channel and an opportunity to be heard.
I'd like to say, by the same token there, I think she's brought out something that for a while was out of sight, and that was that government didn't bother us as individual citizens. I think it does. I think that's what my philosophy is based on. And I think as people begin to realize this, that government touches their own lives, then they begin to take an interest in it.
I think they all realize that this year. I think that's why this is an interesting campaign year and an interesting issue year.
Right. We have discussed for the second week women in politics. Our guests tonight have been Mary Allen, the Kansas State Democratic Party Vice Chairperson, Mary Nell Reese, the Kansas State Republican Party Vice Chairperson, and Danelle Reese-Taha, Associate Professor of Law at KU. I appreciate very much your coming, and thank you for listening to A Feminist Perspective.